Hey everybody, it's Rick. Welcome back to the Nomad Pastor Podcast. Today I just want to jump right in. Have you ever heard someone say, hey, don't let that be your sacred cow? And so before we start talking about that question, we have to know what is a sacred cow. We have to first identify what that really means. And so if you look it up in the dictionary, or you could Google it, right? It's going to tell you that a sacred cow is a noun. It means an idea or a custom or an institution held or something that is especially unreasonable, or it means to be above criticism. And so if we try to understand this, I want to look at what this means. I look at it and I would say something we don't like to question, or something that we feel like we are not allowed to question, or maybe it's even taboo to mention it. Another thing to consider would be that a person can be a sacred cow, right? What if a person is respected so much that you feel wrong to criticize them, or you're told be careful because that person has power? And in the late 1800s in America, this term sacred cow, it really came to mean immune to criticism. That's honestly kind of crazy to me. Nobody should be immune, right? There's numerous words that are related, and you could review them that they all basically reference back to this term of a sacred cow. And so some of those are, something above criticism, right? Favorite, something that is protected, an object of worship, and on and on. In the Bible, we see a sacred cow in the golden calf in Exodus 32, right? I think it's like verses 1 through 6 are really kind of the key points. And you can go read it. I'm not going to. You should go do your own research, right? I say that a lot in these podcasts, that you should go do your own research. But today, I really want to talk about, what is a sacred cow in a church? And are there sacred cows in the church? And what do those look like, right? And so if we look at some of the common things today that I think are sacred cows within the church, we'll start with multiple Sunday services, right? And I say this because, I've seen this in my history of attending different churches, right? And so think about this. Have you ever been to a church where there's like 10 people, and maybe it's the morning service? And then you go to another service at the same church, and there's 40 people there. And as you look at this sanctuary, you notice that the sanctuary is going to hold 150 people, but they still have two services. Maybe they're even doing a Sunday school early in the morning, or they're doing a Bible study in the afternoon, or they're doing a Sunday evening service, right? That Sunday night could be worship or a devotion, or maybe it's a whole new sermon, right? And then if you ask why are you doing all these services, right? Both services combined are only 50 people and you can seat 150. Why are you doing all these things? The common answers that you're going to get are, well, we've always done it this way. Or we need to be available when the people are willing to attend. Or you may hear, well, our elders like to come early, right? The older crowd likes to be here early, and then the youth likes the late service. I'm going to challenge you that this is a problem. For me, if I walk into a church service and there's only 10 people there, my first impression is probably not going to be great. I might think there's something wrong, or, maybe the worship isn't good, or maybe the pastor doesn't preach a good message, or maybe they're straying away. Maybe the children's ministry is lacking and people have left. One thing for sure, though, it's a problem to have an empty building. And when new people show up to visit, they probably won't come back for that reason. So if you're having multiple services because of something you've always done, to me, that's your sacred cow. Stop. Figure out the right thing to do. For me, the next on the list is fighting with other Christians, fighting with other members of the church. I've read a lot of church mission statements, And not a single one says that we should fight with each other. None. But it happens. It happens in every church. So I'm not trying to pick on people. It happens all the time. But it becomes a problem when the church leadership allows it to happen without correction. And I'm not suggesting that you should tell everyone every conversation that you have with your congregation if you're a pastor. But the people in your church can tell if you're willing to deal with this conflict or if you're just going to let it run its course and hope it goes away. I know you can't stop all of it, right? As church leadership, it's not going to be able, you can't stop everything. But don't let it fester because you're unwilling to have a conversation or you're unwilling to deal with that conflict. Another thing that I think is a problem, right? I think it's a common problem. It's not going to be popular, right? But I'm going to say it anyways. And I think that's inviting people to church. I pray that people understand the message I'm trying to convey here. You see, when we go to church services, we are told all the time, invite people to church. It starts to become a common theme in most Sunday services, right? Pastors will even ask you to take a card and give it out to people and invite them to church. I challenge anyone to send me an email with the scripture that says, invite people to church. Invite people to the church building. See, there's lots of scriptures about evangelism and making disciples and outreach. But I believe today people substitute these things with inviting people to church, that you've checked the box if you invite them to church, that somehow inviting people to your church building meets the commandment to go and make disciples. I'm here to tell you that it doesn't. It doesn't even come close. We must love people where they are. We must disciple them where they are. We must earn the right to invite them to church. See, I'm not saying never invite them. They need to come, right? I want them to be there. I want them to grace that building for them, not for me. But I'm saying it's your job to love them and disciple them, not just your pastors or the church staff. And I feel like they do that. They invite people to church so that they can check the box and not do all of those other things. So you can say, I invited people to church. That's not how it works. The next thing on the list for me is activities, right? Today, it feels like churches have activity after activity after activity. And there's a lot of good books and blogs written about church activities, and you can go online and you can find them and you can do your own research. But to make it simple, if you have activities all the time, nonstop in your church, you're not leaving any time for evangelism or outreach. If you're having things all the time in the building, I would challenge you that it feels like, to me, that you're only concerned with the fish that are in your bowl, not the fish that are in the ocean. Go and make disciples of all nations. That doesn't say keep your flock safe from the outside world. That's not what it is. You're supposed to try and keep them safe. You are. But we're taught that in the Bible, this walk that we go through, this Christian life, it's going to be hard. Stop doing activities for your church and instead do activities for the community. Do activities outside of your church building that go to the community, to go and evangelize to people. Stop worrying about your own bowl. Start worrying about the ocean. Now look, these are a very small list of what I personally feel are things that are can be considered sacred cows for people. And I didn't even mention what might be the biggest one of all. I've been to numerous churches and talked with countless people that believe the translation of the Bible that they use is only the real translation. This too has nothing. It's nothing more than a sacred cow, regardless of what you believe. You know, I personally grew up thinking that the only translation was the King James. I didn't even know that there were other translations. I mean, that's crazy, but I didn't know that till like 20 years ago. You know, I'm I'm 49, and so, you know, it was many years before I even knew that. But the problem was, I don't speak King's English. And frankly, I've never met anybody who does. I don't have any friends or associates that speak King's English. I couldn't understand what it was saying. And I couldn't really understand critical verses. It didn't speak to me like God wants to. And because it didn't speak to me, I didn't understand, you know. And then years later, you know, if you've listened to my story, I think it's podcast number 3. If you haven't listened to it, I would love for you to go listen to it. But years later, after my interaction with the Spirit, I actually started looking for a new Bible. And what I found was amazing, because when I went to the store, there was like all these different translations. And I found this one, and it was called the Everyman's Bible. And it was a New Living Translation, NLT. And that, like, the words just jumped off the page for me. It spoke to me. I could understand it. It made me feel like God was directing me himself. And I dug into the word more and more and more. It built a relationship with Christ that I never had with the King James Version, and that I never would have with the King James Version. And as I studied, I learned that there are 3 different types of Bibles. There's a word for word, there's a thought for thought, and there's a paraphrase. So I started with this NLT, which is kind of in between a thought for thought and a paraphrase. But it gave me that relationship I never had before. And as my knowledge progressed, I went from the NLT to the NIV to the NASB. And at this point, I have about every translation there is. And I commonly use them all for different things, depending on the audience I'm trying to reach, depending on what I'm learning, and just depending on what God's directing me to do. So I beg you, don't allow the translation of the Bible that you use to be the sacred cow that prevents people from coming to Christ. I can't be any more clear than that. I've heard pastors say, I need a donation of Bibles. We do this prison ministry. I need Bible donations. And then they get donations of Bibles and they say, I need the real Bible. I need the King James Version of the Bible. I don't really understand what they mean by the real Bible, because the different translations speak to different people at different times in their lives. And they're translated from the original transcript. So just stop making it the sacred cow. You're preventing people from coming to Christ by doing that. There's not a better way to say it, I don't think. Then I would say, and this is probably something maybe people haven't even considered, but have you considered that your ego can be your sacred cow? What we want, what our goals are. It's probably not as important as we think they are, but that what we say they are. They're only important to us because for some reason we've been taught that this is how we define ourselves. What this means is that as we get closer to reaching this goal we set for ourselves, we become defined in a positive way by this success. And that's in our minds, right? And then if we tell people what our goals are, and when we accomplish them, our friends, our family, our relatives, our associates, whoever we work with, the outside people, they will view us in a positive way too. So if winning or accomplishing this goal is so important, it simply means that you're important to yourself. Your ego is craving existence. And the fact that your ego can't have existence because it is only something made up, it only creates more cravings to win. We all want that thing we don't have. We all want what we can't have most of all. Most people want it desperately. You know, I often tell Linda that if I could sing, man, I would sing everything that comes out of my mouth would be a song. I would sing the phone book. I would sing the dictionary. It doesn't matter. I'd be singing right now. I desire it. But God didn't give me that ability because it would have ruined me. It would have ruined me, and my ego would have taken control. If you feel like whatever your ability is so good, so highly desired, or even so highly respected because of what people tell you, that it feels wrong for people to criticize you, then you're your own sacred cow. And I'll try to maybe say that in a different way. If you feel like your abilities are so amazing that when somebody criticizes that ability, you take offense to it, you're your own sacred cow. Don't allow how you feel about yourself or your abilities to be elevated above what God desires in your life. I know that's hard to hear for some people, but it's the truth. That's how I feel. Look, a lot of you know, I'm a member of Church Answers, and Church Answers was founded by Tom Rainer. Tom Rainer was at one point the CEO of Lifeway Christian, and you know, he was with numerous other ministries, you know, Southeastern Baptist Convention, the Billy Graham School. You know, I think he was like the founding dean. He's done a ton of things. He's written well over 24 books, and he's spoken at hundreds of venues. Right, I listened to Tom's podcast. He has a podcast called Rainer on Leadership with his son. And if you don't listen to it, you should. It's a great podcast, right? But on Church Answers, they have a blog. And one of those blogs, I don't remember what it was, talked about sacred cows. And in that blog, he listed 15 common sacred cows in churches today. These 15 items come from this social media poll that he did. And it was really informal, but it, you know, a lot of their polls get a lot of reactions to people because of the community that it serves with Church Answers. And it, and what you find to me that people believe are sacred cows is kind of crazy, right? But, you know, one of the books that Tom Rainer wrote was The Autopsy of a Deceased Church. And they actually went to churches that had closed their doors, right? That had basically died. And he wanted to know why. And so some of these answers, I think, are similar to what, if you go read the book, I've read it numerous times. I have it on audio and in writing, the hard copy of it. It's small. You can read it in a couple hours. I highly recommend it. But I'm going to go through these 15 right from Church Answers, right? I'm not changing them. And so if you go to churchanswers.com and you look at their blog, you'll see these if you search for sacred cows, right? The 15 sacred cows, or I don't remember what the article was called, but if you search sacred cow, you'll find it. And so we're going to go down the list, 1 through 15. The first one is the parlor. Now, I recognize this only in older churches because I don't personally know of any churches that still have parlors, but they exist, right? People don't want you to mess with the parlor. Number two is the organ. To me, this is surprising because worship has changed. But there are still churches that use an organ that refuse to kind of do anything other than piano or organ music. And so this is a huge problem for people. The next one is politics, right? Number three was politics. And I'm going to tell you right now, politics have nothing to do with biblical truths. So just leave them out. Don't talk about them. The fourth one on the list was order of worship. People don't want to change how we do things. You know, me personally, I think this one's because some people like to arrive at certain times for certain things, right? Like if you know that at worship, you're going to do three songs, then you're going to do communion, then you're going to do offering, then you're going to preach. Some people will come, you know, they know each song takes 5 minutes. So they'll come 15 minutes late. They don't have to hear it, but they still get to do communion. If you change it so you do communion first, then people miss it. And so they don't want you to change the order of worship. That's just my opinion, right? The building, I think we all understand that. I didn't understand this one when I read it, but, you know, number six was flowers in the worship center. You know, there are people who are like, I love my flowers. If you take them away, I'm going to go somewhere else. That's crazy, right? Number seven is the music style for worship. There is a war over worship, and there has been for a long time. And while that may have diminished a little, it's still a problem. You know, people still, you know, argue over what style of music we should have in the worship. Number eight is Sunday evening services. I talked about this above, so I'm not going to go into that one. Pews is number 9. People believe that, like, having the ability to sit in a normal chair is, like, evil. They just don't want anything other than pews in their church building. Number 10 is attire, right? There's still that group of people that believe that you got to put on your Sunday best. That it's all about how you look when you go to church, how people dress. I mean, you guys know me. I don't agree with that. I believe you go to church and however you want to go because God loves you anyways. Number 11 on that list was committees. There are way too many committees in churches today, right? And I personally believe instead of doing something, we start a committee to talk about doing something and then never do something. Right? Like, we want to do this outreach thing. Let's build a committee to do this outreach thing. And then that committee talks about it. And we never do outreach. It's crazy to me. Number 12 is cemeteries. Most churches today don't have these, right? But a lot of older churches, they'll have land around the church and there'll be a cemetery there. And so that, you know, for whatever reason came up number 12 on the list. Number 13 is choir robes. I think this is probably because of number 10, right? They want to make sure that everybody looks good. Number 14 was previous pastors. This, for me, I think is the biggest one today. Because when a pastor retires and the church brings in a new pastor, things are going to be different. But people refuse, right? People refuse to see God's calling in what this new pastor is there to do. People refuse to see the hand of God in the changes. People refuse to accept that the new pastor is making decisions through prayer for God, what God wants for this church. And then the last one is white tablecloths for communion. And while it's on the top 15 in the survey, I would have never guessed it, right? It's there because that's what Church Answers listed, because I don't see that a lot nowadays, right? And look, I could go into more detail in each of these, but I just want you to think about them and try to understand how they all could be a problem, you know? I know I could spend hours talking about why you can't or why you should not elevate something to a level that you worship it over God. Something where it now becomes your sacred cow. It's your golden calf, right? I mean, that's what happened when Moses went up the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. You know, the people went to Aaron and said, you know, make us a god. And he wasn't saying make them gods. He was saying, you know, make us something to worship. You know, I think I know that everybody understands. But I just don't generally think people realize that they're even doing it. I don't think people have an intent to go, that's my sacred cow, that's my golden calf, don't mess around with it. I don't think people recognize it. So what I'm going to challenge you with is don't allow your feelings about something to cloud your judgment about what God is calling you or the congregation to do. Don't allow your desire for things to stay the same to impact your relationship with Christ, because you will regret it. Hey, this is Rick. With the Nomad Pastor podcast. I want to thank you for listening. Hopefully you get out of this message everything I do as I try to prepare it and put it in. If you got questions, send me an email at hello@nomadpastor.org and subscribe to these podcasts. It's available on all the platforms of choice, and share it with your friends. I want you to have a blessed week. Thanks.